like to give everyone a happy Friday and welcome to our briefing on our results for the full year of 2018. Joining us on the line are 10 callers, and we'd like to remind everyone that our materials are available for download at ir.ayalaland.com.ph. And of course, allow me to recognize our panel, led by our President and CEO, Mr. Bobby D., Head of our Leasing Business, Mr. Juni Halandoni, and our Chief Finance Officer, Mr. Augusto Benson. And to start our presentation, let me turn over the mic to Mr. Benson.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us today. I am pleased to share with you the company's performance in 2018. Allow me to go through our financial results, after which our CEO will provide you with updates to our 2020 growth plan. 2018 was another banner year for Ayala Land, and I'm pleased to share how we steadily pushed for growth across our business lines. Ayala Land posted solid top line and bottom line growth of 17 and 16% respectively, with revenues of 166 billion and net income of 29.2 billion. Property sales grew by 16% to 142 billion, driven by strong local and overseas Filipino demand. Meanwhile, leasing revenues increased 17% to 34.9 billion on the back of robust local consumption, solid BPO demand, and a developing tourism sector. We launched 139 billion worth of residential and office for sale projects, an all-time high for Ayala Land. Our leasing businesses expanded further last year, ending with malls GLA of 1.9 million square meters, office GLA of 1.1 million square meters, and 2,973 rooms under our hotels and resort segment. At the end of 2018, we spent 110 billion in capex, right in line with our budget. And even as we did so, we kept our balance sheet well within check. Our net gearing ratio actually improved from 0.77 in the previous year to 0.72. And we increased our nationwide footprint with the launch of Parklinks in Metro Manila and Habini Bay in Misamis Oriental. Ayala Land now has a total of 26 estates across the country. The economy continued to provide a good platform for us to build on our growth plans, which helped us achieve our financial targets. Total revenues reached 166 billion, 17% higher than 142 billion in 2017. Real estate revenues increased by 18% to 162.9 billion on account of the strong performance of property development and commercial leasing. Equity and net earnings of associates and JVs registered at 750 million, 13% lower than last year as we consolidated our MCT subsidiary in Malaysia and no longer recognized any equity pickup. Interest and investment income registered at 1.1 billion, a 19% growth due to higher interest income from money market placements. Meanwhile, our other income was 31% lower as we recognized a one-time gain on the reversal of the impairment on one of our properties in 2017. In terms of expenses, we registered a total of 121 billion, 16% more than last year, mainly due to higher real estate expenses, which grew by 15% to 101 billion. GAE increased to 9 billion, resulting in a higher GAE ratio of 5.5%, while EBIT margins continued to improve to 33.3% from 32.7%. Interest expense, financing, and other charges posted a 19% increase to 10.9 billion as a result of higher interest expense from the increased outstanding debt and higher discounting costs related to our AR, accounts receivable sale program. Netting out non-controlling interests amounting to 4 billion, our net income attributable to ALI equity holders registered at 29.2 billion, 16% higher year-on-year. Excluding the one-time gain that we booked in 2017, our net income actually grew by 20%. We continue to balance our growth with projects from property development and commercial leasing. Total revenues from property development amounted to 120 billion, 18% higher than 2017. Residential revenues reached 101 billion, posting a growth of 20% driven by new bookings and project completion. Revenues from the sale of office spaces came in at 11.4 billion, 14% higher due to new bookings from One Vertis Plaza in Vertis North, the Styles Enterprise East Tower at Circuit Makati, and higher completion of our Park Triangle Corporate Plaza in BGC. Revenues from the sale of commercial and industrial lots reached 7.7 billion, a 10% increase due to higher lot sales in our Vismin Estates, Evo City, and increased industrial lot sales in our Alviera and Cavite Technopark. In terms of commercial leasing, our revenues reached 34.9 billion, 17% higher. Revenues from shopping centers increased by 13% to 19.9 billion due to the contribution of Greenbelt and Glorieta in Makati, the improved performance of our newly opened malls such as the UP Town Center, Ayala Malls Cloverleaf and Vertis North in Quezon City, and Ayala Malls Feliz and the 30th in Pasig City. Office leasing revenues were up 29% to 8.6 billion due to the stabilized occupancy of our new offices such as Vertis Corporate Center in Quezon City, Circuit Corporate Center in Makati, and the 30th Corporate Center in Pasig City. Revenues from hotels and resorts were 14% higher and reached 6.4 billion due to the full year operations of Seda Vertis North, Seda Capital Central Bacolod, and the recently renovated Apulit Island Resort in El Nido, Palawan, coupled with the improved performance of our bed and breakfast offerings. MDC generated revenues of 71 billion, 6% higher, due to the increased order book of projects from the Ayala Land Group. Ayala Property Management, our power service companies, and AirSwift registered revenues of 5.3 billion, a slight 2% decrease due to reduced rates of retail electricity supply contracts. Netting out intercompany adjustments, our real estate revenues amounted to 162.9 billion, 18% higher year on year. With interest and other income of 3.4 billion, total revenues amounted to 166.2 billion, 17% higher. Our margins remain healthy. The average GP margins of horizontal projects decreased to 44% from 47% due to the lower contribution of higher margin projects, while the GP margin of our vertical projects improved to 34% from 30% due to higher margins from Alveo's High Park Tower 2, Orion Place Tower 1, and Avida's Sola Tower 2 in Vertis North, and Avida's project in South Park District, Altura Tower 2. GP margins on offices for sale registered a lower 33% from 37% due to lack of higher margin inventory, while the gross profit margin of commercial and industrial lots improved to 50% from 40% due to commercial lot sales in Arca South, Alviera, Evo City, and Leo, and industrial lots in Alviera and Cavite Technopark. The EBITDA margin of our shopping centers was maintained at 66%. Office leasing EBITDA margin was sustained at 91%, and hotels and resorts EBITDA improved to 29%. Overall, EBITDA margins of our services business registered at 99%, slightly lower than the previous year due to project mix. Estates continue to be our competitive advantage. New innovations on this front add value to the living and working experience in our developments. We continue to diversify our net income mix with net new estates contributing 54% to the bottom line, coming from 46% at the end of 2017. Recurring income now stands at 32% of the total. It is worth noting that the compounded average growth rate of our recurring income from 5 years back is at 26% versus 18% for development income. This is a clear indication of our recurring income's growing contribution to a much larger bottom line. Residential demand continues to be strong. Sales reservations reached 141.9 billion, 16% higher than last year, while net booked sales grew 14% to 110 billion. In the fourth quarter of 2018, reservation sales increased by 21% to 33.8 billion, and net bookings grew by 9% to 32.7 billion. We launched a total of 19 projects in the fourth quarter of 2018, amounting to 57.6 billion, bringing us to a total of 139.4 billion in total value of residential projects launched as of the end of 2018. This was a record number of launches for Ayala Land. Unbooked revenues now stands at 142 billion, and this will be booked in the next 3 to 4 years. Based on the percentage of completion. Growth in sales reservations was driven by strong local and overseas Filipino demand. Local Filipinos, which comprise 71% of the total, grew by 26%, while sales to OFWs jumped 34% to 15.7 billion, taking up 11% of the total sales reservation. Meanwhile, sales to non-Filipinos totaled 24.8 billion or 18% of total sales. This is 17% lower than last year, of which approximately 49% are composed of mainland Chinese buyers, 15% American nationals, and the rest of various nationalities. In the fourth quarter of 2018 alone, sales to local Filipinos grew by 48%, while sales to OFWs grew by 37%. Sales to other nationalities in the fourth quarter declined by 50%. Let me walk you through a few of our key launches. Park Links in Quezon City. This is a 35-hectare estate straddling Quezon City and Pasig along C5. It is our greenest urban estate, wherein we will be dedicating 50% of the total area to open spaces. Main features are the Central Park, Esplanade, River Park terraces, running and bike trails, a 110-meter bridge, iconic bridge linking Quezon City and Pasig City over the Marikina River. We will be putting up a 58,000 square meter regional mall and a 3,500 square meter sports complex. ALP and Alveo will be launching 5 residential towers each. Initial capex in the next 10 years is estimated at 53 billion. Total GFA build out will be 1.7 million square meters, of which 50% will be dedicated to residential uses and 50% to commercial and office uses. This is a joint venture, a 50-50 joint venture with the Eton Lucetan Group. In November, we launched Habini Bay, which is in Misamis Oriental. This is going to be Northern Mindanao's premier gateway development. And this is a 60-40 joint venture with Ayala Corporation. An industrial park will be managed by our Laguna Technopark. We'll have a seaport, a provincial bus terminal, a technical school, and a new municipal government center to complement residential and mixed-use commercial developments. Total GFA build-out is expected to hit 2.4 million square meters, of which 43% will go to industrial uses, 32% to commercial uses, and 25% for residential. These are the key launches of Ayala Land Premier. Just to highlight the residences at Azuela Cove in Davao City, Tower 1 was launched in April. It's now been fully taken up. So we actually had to pull forward the launch of Tower 2 in July, of which 35% has now been taken up. We launched Park Links North Tower in November, 280 units with a value of 12 billion pesos, of which more than a third has already been taken up. For Alveo, Calisto Tower 2 at the circuit, 694 units with a value of 6.2 billion, 39% taken up. And Park Cascades Tower 2 in Arca South, Taguig, 2.6 billion worth, more than half has been taken up. For Avida, Avida Towers Atria Tower 3 in Iloilo, 289 units, 60% taken up. Abreeza Tower 1 in Davao, 2.6 billion worth, 736 units, 46% taken up. And in our office for sale category, ALP's first office for sale project in Vertis North, 1 Vertis Plaza, value of 15.6 billion, more than half has been taken up. For Alveo, the Trine Enterprise Plaza in Arca South, Taguig, 6.3 billion worth, 28% taken up. So in 2018, residential projects and office for sale condominiums, a total of 139.4 billion in value, 48 projects. Going over to our leasing business, we added 142,000 square meters of GLA in 2018 by opening three new malls. These are the Circuit Mall in Makati with 52,000 square meters of GLA, Capital Central Mall in Bacolod with 67,000 square meters, and One Bonifacio High Street in Taguig with 23,000 square meters of GLA. This brings our total shopping centers GLA to 1.9 million square meters at the end of last year. The average occupancy rate for all malls is at 89%, while the occupancy rate for our stable malls is at 95%. Same mall rental growth came in at 6%. Our upcoming openings are the Ayala North Exchange in Makati with 8,000 square meters of GLA, and the Ayala Malls Bay Area Phase 1 with 140,000 square meters. Total GLA under construction stands at 727,000, and we expect to deliver between 150 to 200,000 square meters of new malls GLA within the next 12 months. For office leasing, we added 91,000 square meters by completing four new offices in 2018. These are the Bacolod Capital Corporate Center, 11,000 square meters, Vertis North Corporate Center 3 with 38,000 square meters, and Ayala North Exchange HQ Tower with 20,000 square meters and 22,000 square meters in the Ayala North Exchange BPO Tower. This brings our total office GLA leasing figure to 1.1 million square meters as of the end of 2018. The average occupancy rate for all offices stands at 91%, while the occupancy rate for our stable offices is at 96%. Upcoming openings are the Ayala North Exchange BPO with 18,000 square meters, Bay Area BPO 18,000, BGC Corporate Center with 27,000 square meters, and Central Block with 30,000 square meters. The Ayala North Exchange Tower 2 is currently 100% leased out to four corporate clients, while the Bay Area BPO is 100% leased out. These are our two office buildings which we'll be opening in the first half of this year. Total GLA under construction is 424,000 square meters, and this year we are targeting to deliver a total of 90,000 square meters of new office space. For our hotels and resorts portfolio, a total of 390 rooms were added. This brings the total number of rooms in operation to 2,973 as of the end of December 2018. I'd just like to highlight the performance of our stable facilities. Our stable hotels have increased their RevPAR by 6% to 4,369 pesos. Our resorts, our stable resorts, have increased their RevPAR by 12% to 10,896 pesos. Occupancy, stable hotels, occupancy of our stable hotels were up 4 percentage points to 78%. And for our resorts, it's been a strong 64%. Upcoming hotels and resorts include the expansion of SEDA BGC with 342 rooms. And SEDA Residences Makati with 293 rooms. Cedar Residences Makati will be our first service residence offering, and will allow guests to stay for a minimum of 20 days at 5,000 pesos per night. Similar to our existing Cedar hotels, it will have food and beverage outlets, namely Misto and Straight Up. And each room will have kitchenettes equipped with glassware, cutlery and utensils, and microwaves. It will also have huddle rooms or serviced offices, as well as a laundry area. For our hotels and resorts portfolio, we have a total of 3,096 rooms under construction. And for this year, we are targeting to open an additional 900 rooms. We're focused on developing new product lines that not only keep our offerings fresh within our estates, but also answer the changing needs of the market. For our co-living spaces, we have the flats, which now has a total of 2,228 beds from two locations, one in Amorsolo, Makati, and the other in BGC 5th Avenue. We will ramp up our capacity by opening an additional 3,545 beds in two locations, one in BGC and another in Circuit Makati. This will be opening in 2020 and 2021 respectively. For our co-working spaces, we have a brand called Clock In. We now have a total of 433 seats, and we will grow this by an additional 898 seats all within this year. The new branches will be in Vertis North, Quezon City, the 30th in Pasig, one in Leo. This will open in the first quarter of 2019, while Ayala North Exchange and Alabang Town Center will be opening their clock-ins within the second quarter of this year. On the industrial front, we currently operate 137,000 square meters of factory buildings and warehouses located in our technoparks in Cavite and Laguna and our industrial park in Alviera. That's in Pampanga. We plan to grow this aggressively in the years to come. These leasing formats will be a complement to our traditional leasing formats of malls, offices, and hotels and resorts, and will cater to emerging segments that hopefully will become key contributors to our portfolio in the near future. Our balance sheet continues to be solidly positioned. Our total debt increased by 7%, while stockholders' equity increased by 15%. We now have a current ratio of 1.26:1. And as I mentioned, our net debt to equity ratio, our gearing levels further improved to 0.72 from 0.77 in 2017. So our net gearing is even lower than the net gearing that we had when we started our 2020 plan in 2014. In 2014, our net gearing was at 0.74. ROE came in at 16.5%, the highest in the industry. Our debt portfolio continues to be strong and resilient enough to operate in a higher interest rate environment. Our average borrowing cost moved up incrementally to 4.8%, slightly higher than 4.6% in 2017. And 89% of our debt continues to be locked in with fixed rates, while 92% of the total portfolio is contracted on a long-term basis. In 2018, we spent a total of 110 billion in capex. This is an all-time high, of which 41% went to the completion of residential projects, 23% to the completion of commercial leasing projects, 15% for land acquisition, 12% for estate development, and the balance for the acquisition of more shares in MCT, Prime Orion, and investments in other businesses. So to summarize our 2018, the company posted solid top line and bottom line growth of 17 and 16% respectively. Property sales grew by 16%, driven by strong local and overseas Filipino demand. Leasing revenues continued to increase. It grew by 17% on the back of robust local consumption, solid BPO demand, and a developing tourism sector. We launched an all-time high of 139 billion worth of residential and office for sale projects. Our leasing business continued to grow. Our malls GLA now stands at 1.9 million square meters, office GLA of 1.1 million square meters, and 2,973 rooms under our hotels and resorts segment. record high capex of 110 billion even as we kept our net gearing and improved it further to 0.72. And we now have 26 estates spread across the country with the opening of Park Links in Metro Manila and Habini Bay in Misamis Oriental. So with that, I'd like to turn you over to our CEO for his updates. Thank you.
Thank you, Toti. I was actually looking at everybody while Toti was presenting, and all I could see were blank stares and blank faces. So is it in accordance to expectations or below your expectations? Well, I'll tell you from my perspective. I actually think that it was an amazing year for Yale Land, and I'll tell you why. As you know, last year was difficult. We faced some difficulties in the environment. I know there were some macroeconomic headwinds. In particular, interest rates were going up. As you know, inflation was also quite significant, no? And a cause of concern last year. To add to that, there were also international headwinds that we were seeing, no? Slowdown in China, trade war between China, and the U.S. As well as you know, the Fed in the U.S. was also hiking their interest rates quite aggressively. No? Given the backdrop, the company actually recorded record financial results across the board. And let me highlight again what Toti mentioned. Record revenue plus 17%, net income at plus 16%. But as Toti mentioned, there was a one-time gain recorded back in 2017. So if we strip that out, basically you're looking at core income increasing at 20%. At the same time, we're able to do this while keeping our leverage in check. In fact, it did go down from a net debt to equity ratio of 0.77 to end at 0.72. So in terms of the financial performance, I thought that it was actually an amazing year. But in addition to that, we continue to plant seeds for future growth. We basically had record capex spending at 110, record product launches. If you remember, I think we gave a guidance of about 100 to 110 billion of residential product launches in 2018. But we had to ramp up in the fourth quarter based on the demand that we were seeing, and we basically closed at about 139 billion in product launches. On top of that, we continue to acquire land. I think we increased our land bank by about 1,500 hectares last year. And while doing all of these things, again, we kept our leverage in check. To reiterate, we reduced it now to 2.72. As Toti mentioned, lower than the 2014 level when we started the 2020 40 plan. So when I look at last year, just to summarize what Toti mentioned, I thought it was a great year for Yaland. Exceeded personally my expectations given the headwinds that we were actually seeing in the market. Now, moving forward, just want to give it a little bit of an update on the 2020-40 plan. And this basically tracks our net income way back in 2009 and then up to the end of 2018. If you look at this particular chart, if you take the last 5 years when we launched the 2020-40 plan, we actually grew our net income at 20% compounded annual growth rate. I think the fastest in the industry. If we take the last 10 years, we actually grew that by 25%. Again, the fastest in the industry. Now, people say, okay, you're able to grow that, et cetera, but what happened to your capital deployment, capital recycling, gearing, et cetera, et cetera? And I think as an organization, we've actually proved that we can grow this business at a significant pace while deploying and recycling capital efficiently, as you could see from our return on equity. We started back in 2009 at 8%. And you can see that increasing gradually every year to close at 16.5% last year. Again, an industry-leading statistic. And while we're doing this, if you see, we initially levered or increased our gearing from 2009 to 2014. But since we rolled out the 2020-40 plan, we've now kept that at the 0.7 to 0.8 range. So again, it proves the ability of the organization to grow at industry-leading rates while being able to deploy, recycle capital efficiently, and keeping our balance sheet at a fairly conservative level. And I just want to highlight, when you look at the balance sheet, that is based on historical book value. That is not mark to market. So if you look at it based on asset value, that gearing is much, much lower than what is actually being indicated in this chart, which actually tells us that if there are opportunities out there in the market that we need to take advantage of, the company has the balance sheet flexibility to take advantage of that opportunity. Now, to the 2020-40 plan, we're now basically in our last 2 years. No? So I can't believe that we first rolled this out in 2014, and now we're here, 2 years to go. And I remember when we first rolled this out back in 2014, I was talking to some people, and I saw some, I don't know if it's concern or a little bit of a disbelief of whether this is something that that we can achieve. But I think now we're getting close. If you look at 2019 and 2020, we now need to grow on average 17% per year, which has been lower than what we've grown over the last 5 years and a lot lower than the last 10 years. So as an organization, we remain committed and we feel confident that these targets are achievable, or this target is achievable, to get to the 40 billion net income. Why do we believe that? I think we have the platform in place. First, our land bank. As I mentioned, we increased our land bank again last year by 1,500 hectares, which not only secures our growth in the next 2 years, but we're now looking at the next 7 to 10 years. So the additional land bank came from Cavite, Tarlac, Laguna, as well as Bulacan. In terms of strategy, we're not changing it. We're primarily community builders. We're estate builders. We take relatively large parcels, master plan them, and put in our various products to be able to create a community. So that remains in place. As you know, last year we increased the number of estates from 24 to 26, and we expect to continue to increase that over time. Strategy remains the same. Get the estate platform in place, put in our residential brands, our offices, commercial shopping centers, hotels and resorts. And now we're adding also new products. As Toti mentioned, we now have the flats, clock-in, warehouses. So all of these will allow us flexibility to be able to create a community at a much faster pace. So just as a look to 2019, and we want to keep this relatively simple for people to remember. So in terms of residential and office for sale, which is basically our development products, we're planning to launch 130 billion this year. And so that also people remember it easily. The CapEx, we've matched it now to 130 as well. So both, again, will be near all-time high. As you know, this year we launched 140. For 2019, we're planning 130. But depending what we see out there, that might actually be higher or lower depending on how the market evolves. But in terms of CapEx, I think, for the most part, that is something that we feel that our balance sheet can carry, and something that we feel is necessary to be able to ensure that we're able to meet our growth aspirations. So with that, let me just summarize. I think 2019 was a good year. In fact, I think personally it was a great year. And we continue to be positioned for further growth, keeping in mind that we will have that balance sheet remain to be conservatively financed and flexible for any opportunities that we might actually see out in the market. So with that, I think what we'll do now is we'll open it to Q&A.
But before we open, I'd like to recognize the presence of Mr. Robert Lau, head of our residential business group. So he'll join us here in front. Now we can take in questions from our live audience first.
So since Robert is here now, so you could ask him all the difficult questions.
Questions, please. Yes, Christina Ulang.
Good afternoon. Thank you, sir, for that nice enlightening perspective going forward in hindsight of 2018. So my question is just about the what Colliers, in relation to what Colliers has been mentioned in their assessment of the Metro Manila situation in terms of the excess, like in the mall, they see there's already an excess of about like 200,000. In the office, excess of about 200,000 SQ, and then in the high rise, it's about 18,000. It's about like 18,000 units, and in the office, about. In the office, it's about 1.2 supply, 1.2 million against 1 million demand, SQM. And in the mall, it's about 18,000 SQM of excess. And in residential, about 800 units excess. Sir, if I'm rattling off the correct numbers, I'd like to get your view on where we are exactly in the real estate cycle and whether you believe in the excess, if we have an excess supply situation, and in this kind of environment, whether your goals are still achievable.
Let me make a brief comment and maybe pass it on to some of my colleagues for a little bit more color. I think the first thing I want to say is on the real estate cycle, because people have been talking about the real estate cycle, whether we're now at the peak, are we now going to start to decline. I think beginning 2012, I think 2013, I started getting those questions already. First thing I want to say is I can't predict that particular cycle, but let me tell you my perspective. One, if you believe that the country, the Philippines, will continue to grow at this pace, which is around 6-7% GDP growth rate, then demand for residential products, demand for offices, demand for hotels, demand for shopping centers will continue to increase. In particular, because of our demographic profile, which is a fairly young population, basically now getting to a demographic sweet spot. And because what we're seeing is increased urbanization, where most of our developments are located. So if you believe that, I think the long-term trend line will continue to go up. It will be upwards. Now, during that period, you could experience some volatility, which we saw. Again, in residential, we saw that back in 2015, 2016, wherein we saw the industry contract a little bit, but we saw it come back in a significant way in 2017, 2018. So for residential, my sense is, and what we've been experiencing so far in 2018 has been strength and not oversupply. In fact, in the fourth quarter last year, we find ourselves catching up on inventory, on launches to be able to provide the inventory in the market. That's why, as I mentioned, I think we had only planned 100 billion, 210 billion in launches. We ended up at 139 a billion. And that's an indication, I think, of the strength of the development, which is basically residential and office for sale markets. In terms of office, again, last year, the industry experienced record take-up. And our own position right now is we actually don't have enough inventory that's completed out there. I think for the most part, most of the offices that we have basically been taken up. So now, again, we're playing catch-up and looking forward to the completion of Tower 2 here at the Ayala Triangle Gardens, as well as One Ayala, as well as a couple of office buildings in Bonifacio. Now, in terms of shopping centers, again, the data I have are basically the major player in our data. And when I look at what has happened to that business, it continues to grow year on year above inflation. No? And if you look at our own statistic on the mall year on year mall sales growth, I think we registered 6%. And the reason that 6% is because of the incident that one of our merchants had in Cebu, a fire in Cebu, that caused that number to dip a little bit. But without that fire incident, that number would have been 7-8% in terms of same mall sales growth. So, from my perspective, and what we're seeing, we're not seeing any oversupply at the moment in any of the major business lines that we actually have. Now, having said that, as I said, given that this is real estate, particularly on the development side of the business, the trend line is moving up, but there could be some volatility along the way. So maybe expect some excitement. If it doesn't happen in 2019, maybe beyond 2019.
So we shouldn't look at the 130 billion launches, the target for this year, as a reflection of somehow holding back.
The way we manage our inventories depends on what we see in the market. We have the capability to basically increase introduction of product depending on the take-up that we're seeing in the market. Similar to last year, we had communicated a lower number than what we had actually introduced to the market. So we do this basically a monthly tracking to see where we are on our inventory levels. Right now, the end of 2018, we have 1 year's worth of inventory. We were at about nine months back at the end of Q3. And our target really is anywhere from 12 months to 18 months of inventory for our development business.
Just your view on how the higher interest rates and mortgage rates, liquidity situation is impacting the affordability of your residential. Is there any concern there?
It has affected affordability, particularly in the middle income market. But given the increase, we feel that it's still manageable. We've not seen any kind of any significant backouts in terms of people who've either reserved units or have actually made their down payments. You know? So I think it is at a point wherein it is still manageable for our buyers. And the other one advantage we also have is people could trade down if they find that one particular brand becomes to be unaffordable. We have another brand that will be able to service their requirements because we basically service or have the ability to provide product from 450,000 pesos all the way to upwards 200 million. So it's really just picking products that one could afford considering the increase in interest rates.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Tina. Yes.
Hi, good afternoon and congratulations on the results. Can you please give us more color as to why international demand has somewhat slowed down in 4Q, specifically the Chinese demand, and what is your outlook for this international demand going forward? Thank you.
In terms of sales for residential during the fourth quarter, I think the local market is very healthy, so we'd rather focus locally. We're not that proactive in the international in getting international business.
Thank you, Rachelin. Any follow-up question? Okay, one question from Jun Tarabago. Then we'll get back to you.
Hi, good afternoon. Congrats on the results. Just a follow-up question on the... Bob, please feel free to answer over my 20. On the question on interest rates earlier, could you share your experience in the fourth quarter of last year? Because, please correct me if I'm wrong, the adjustment of mortgage rates was actually delayed a little bit, and at least from our survey, it seemed like the adjustment was primarily in late third or early fourth quarter last year. Or again, please correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what we thought we saw. That being the case, there didn't seem to be a let up in terms of residential take up growth. Could you talk about the dynamic? Could there be a lag effect on demand? And if so, could you give us an update? I think, Toti, I asked the same question, I think, 2-3 quarters ago. Could you give us an update on your expectations? A bit more granularity on the expectations of the relationship of mortgage rates going up. Of course, arguably, some people are saying might stop already or go down. But what is Ayala Land's perspective on that front? Because that's a very important part of our investment thesis.
Here's the formula, Jun, that I mentioned to you previously. 1,000 pesos, 2 percentage points up per million. So for every 1 million peso worth of mortgage loan, if rates go up by 200 basis points, your monthly amortization goes up by 1,000 pesos. So we think that even with a 200 basis points move up in interest rates, affordability, which in the Philippines is measured by the monthly amortization, is still there. So what we have found is that it's not so much the interest rate that influences that monthly amortization as it is the tenor. And we're quite fortunate that in the Philippines, we have a lot of mortgage banks who are eager to deploy their capital and grow their mortgage books. So today, in Ayala Land, we have more than a dozen partner mortgage banks. They're all eager to increase their portfolio. And so they're offering, they continue to offer 5, 10, 15, and even 20-year fixed-rate mortgages. So what we would recommend to buyers and to all of you who are still contemplating on whether you should buy an Ayala Land property, we highly suggest that if you do so and need a mortgage, then take out a fixed rate mortgage, because our partner mortgage banks are offering 5-year fixed at 8.5, 10-year fixed at 9.5, and 20-year fixed at 10.5. So at these levels, we think it's still a fairly good deal, and the monthly amortization can still remain affordable. So having said that, when we look at Ayala Land buyers, our top three brands account for 92% of our sales. ALP, we found that only about at most 10% require a mortgage. That's a similar number for Alveo. For Avida, 80% would require a mortgage. So our customer base is not as affected by higher mortgage rates. But again, we're quite cognizant that increasing mortgage rates could affect sales. But from our perspective, from where rates are today, it remains to be relatively attractive. So to all of you who are looking for a new home and you want a mortgage, lock it in 5, 10, or 20 years. It's still a good deal. We have over a dozen partner mortgage banks who you can talk to.
Could you say what's the threshold for mortgage rates before we can actually see a impact on the or a slowdown in the residential income?
Again, it's going to be dependent on your I guess your income level and your particular situation in life. So at least from what from our customer base, most of them are still not as dependent on mortgages. Hard to say exactly, June, where that tipping point would be. But I guess similar to what we've said in the past, it's not so much the incremental increase in rates that matter as it is as how fast it goes up. I think if it moves up very quickly in a short period of time, then there's that's an indication of some underlying stress in the economy. So I think we would be more worried if interest rates moved up sharply in a very short period of time. We're not seeing that.
Thanks, Sonny. Another question is on Green Circle. Could you, is it Blue or Green Circle? The big tract of land you JV'd with. Could you give us an update on that, if any?
No update. As you know, we signed an MOU, no? So we're actually still undergoing some due diligence, as well as negotiating the final terms of the agreement.
Okay. Thank you. And lastly, just curious, Bob, if you can share your views on why do you think the stock, despite, I mean, great, very good operating performance and all of that, just curious, why do you think the stock is trading at a steep discount to, or at a discount, significant discount to net asset value? I mean, we have our own opinion, of course, but I'm just curious if you guys would like to share with you your thoughts on that. A steep discount to net asset value.
I should ask you that question. Maybe we should write it up as a strong buy. Maybe we'll narrow that discount. But I don't know the answer to your question, but I think, you know, when people ask me, investments, recommend. When people ask me about investments and to recommend invest, I feel that obviously there's a big gap between I think the intrinsic value of this company and what it is actually trading. So I think it's an opportunity for investors to to really come in at this point. That's my own perspective. But no matter what you do, my advice is just buy Ayala Land, whether it be property or shares.
Well said. Thank you. Congratulations on the results.
Thank you, June. We have a follow-up question from Rachelin.
Sorry, just related to the previous question, since last year we've seen huge Chinese demand, is there any problem coming in this year that there's a huge drop? There's a huge drop for 2018.
There's really no problem with the international market. But what happened last year is, late last year, the bulk of the launches happened in the second half. And during launches, normally the local guys are the first one to get the units, because the Chinese market, you have to go there. Some are here, but if our agents are looking for buyers, and the first buyers are normally the first one to get the units, then they don't need to go to international market to get to get clients.
Oh.
So yung local na una, normally.
So it's more priority local.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Rachelin. I saw Jeff Tocera raising his hand earlier.
Hi. Thank you for the briefing. I just wanted to ask if you have any direction you can provide with your launches next year. Will it still be outside of Metro Manila or within Metro Manila? Siguro in relation or in with the Chinese take-up, whether it will be in the BGC or Makati areas where there are Chinese demand.
majority of the projects are still in Metro Manila, but we're expanding outside. In the north, Pampanga, Tarlac, south, Cavite, Laguna, Batangas, and Cebu, Davao, in Mindanao, Cagayan de Oro. I think that's the whole Philippines already. So.
Okay.
Maybe Jeff, we can narrow it to you. Wherever GDP is growing, that's where we'll be launching.
Okay. Lastly, on the POGOs, can you give us an idea where it is on the square meter take up offices?
Yes, for POGOs last year, we had about 30% of our take up for POGOs, but that's still less than 10% of our total office portfolio, and we only accommodate that in selected properties, so not in our major flagships here in Makati, but in just selected properties.
Okay. Mike, I just wanted to clarify, when you showed the key launches of residential projects earlier, the percentage take up there is as of end December?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Yeah, Jomar.
Thank you. Actually, my first question is on the residential sales. I hope I got my numbers right, but the fourth quarter is pretty strong. I think for the locals, like 48%. I think I got that number right. So I was wondering, if you're going to look at that in terms of segmentation, what were the, which, what segments were customers buying more? So what's the change, basically? What was there, where the demand was coming from, whether it's going to be the ALP or...
It's across the board.
Yeah.
We felt strength across the board. Significant on the high end, significant on the middle income, significant on the socialized housing.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure it's significant. I mean, like it's across the board. But my thinking is that demand shouldn't be homogeneous. You know, shouldn't be, right? So
it depends on the inventory that we have available. Right. So I think if you look at it on a quarter-on-quarter basis, the changes will be more based on available inventory.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask me, overall market, luxury, middle income, affordable, socialized, mm-hmm. last year, strong across the board. And this is not just us. I think you've seen also the results of some of our other peers in the industry. I think it's reflective of, I guess, the strength of the demand in 2018.
Mm-hmm. If I were to look at reverse that, what were the segments that the international buyers were not buying anymore?
International buy, well, the I'll click first on the Chinese because they're the biggest segment of international buyers. No? That particular segment is primarily focused on the middle income segment. We don't see many of them in the luxury segment. Now the other buyers, like the buyers from the U.S., Japan, Singapore, it's a mix, luxury to middle income.
Okay, and. I guess overseas Filipino and the local Filipino, they buy the same? I mean, or is there the overseas more luxury?
No, our own split. Okay, yeah. About I think 2/3 of our sales come from ALP and Alveo. Okay, so that's basically your high-end luxury market. But that's our own experience. In fact, in line with our own strategy, because as you know, mm-hmm. in the luxury and high-end segment, when we develop a project, it is typically working capital neutral. In the middle income, affordable, and socialized housing, we need working capital to fund the construction. So part of our strategy is to make sure that as we develop, that we keep a good mix of high-end luxury compared to middle-income affordable, so that our balance sheet is not overly stretched on the contingent liability side. I see other developers that are focused on middle-income affordable, and they're doing very well as well. But for us, it's part of the strategy to make sure that, you know, the majority of our sales and launches continue to be on the luxury and the high-end. No? Because we're also using a lot of capital to fund the build-up of our commercial assets as well as our land banking activities. No?
Yes. Okay. Thank you. I have questions on the leasing, stable and non-stable. So if I look to look at the stable and non-stable, if I were to look at the 1.9 million square meters of mall, and same with the office, how much of that is the stable? Is it like 90% of that?
Just we define stable as a mall that's been open for the past 3 years. So if you look at the build out, then, from the 1.9, maybe you can back out the previous 2 years.
3 years, then that's where we start going. And can you give us an update on the Bay Area, whether you've made any changes to the plan? And my understanding is there's gonna be a significant mall or retail component that's going to be built there. What do you expect that? Is that on track? And when will it be completed?
I'll pass it on to our head of the malls, Yeng Tupas, to answer the question.
Hi. So 2019 is going to be our biggest year yet in terms of opening. So Manila Bay is on track to launch by April. It's our biggest flagship mall yet. So that's phase one will be open in April, and that's over 140,000 square meters of GLA. In total, we have about 250,000.
For 2019?
For 2019, we're looking at 140 for phase one.
Okay.
About 140,000.
But for the all the malls for 2019?
For 2019, so we're opening 225,000 square meters of GLA. The first one will be, it's a small retail, it's a pocket retail at the Ayala North Exchange here along Ayala Avenue. That's 8,000 square meters. We call that Ayala North Exchange. So by April, we have Manila Bay. And then towards the fourth quarter of this year, we're going to be launching a mall in the Central Block in Cebu.
Okay,
that's over 40,000 square meters of GLA.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jomar. Any more questions? Yes, Fred.
Hello, good afternoon. First of all, congratulations with your results. I just have one question with regard to your office business. Your office rental grew by 29% year on year, but your GLA, for instance, for offices additional is only around 10% roughly. So can you provide more granularity on where the additional 19% came from? Is that mostly from higher rent per square meter or more on occupancy?
Well, basically, there's a higher take up as well. No, I mean the lease out for 2018 is 94%. A year ago, it was below 90. So, in terms of occupancy, also it's our portfolio is also performing much better. No, so it's a combination of escalation, better occupancy, and new GLA. All of that adds up to the higher number compared to the higher GLA growth on. So.
Just a follow up. Just to do a simple back of the envelope calculation, GLA grew 10%. Let's say occupancy grew by 7%. Let's say from 88 to 95%. So that's 17. So did rent per square increase by around 10 to 12%?
No. So.
The if I'm not mistaken, the average rental rate portfolio wise grew by about 3%. But you also, aside from what Junie said, sometimes you have a lag effect. When you lease out a unit, typically there's a rent free period for them to fit out before you start collecting revenues. No? So I suspect this is also spillover from 2017 to 2018, wherein those that weren't paying rent yet in 2017 because they were fitting out started to pay in 2018.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Fred. Any more questions from the live audience? Mr. Carl C.
Good afternoon. I'd like to ask about the mall leasing business. It says here for average occupancy, I think for the full year, 89%, and then stable malls at 95%. I recall that in the 9 months period, this was 88 and 94. So does this mean for the fourth quarter, actually, average occupancy of the total mall portfolio is already in the low 90s? And maybe for stable malls, are you already actually at, let's say, 97? So that's about right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Carl. Maybe we'll open out the floor for questions from our callers.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask questions, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. The first question is from the line of Jason Yeo from Goldman Sachs. Your line is now open.
Hi, good afternoon. I have two questions. First question is on the cost of debt. Last quarter, we were talking about 7% marginal cost of debt. Has that actually come down since?
We did the effects on borrowings last year at 7%. We will be going out into the market probably in the second quarter of this year. We think new debt would be possibly slightly lower given that benchmark rates have actually eased. Specifically, the 10-year benchmark has come down. Today, it's about 6.3%. So we probably could come in with 10-year debt a little lower than what we did last year.
Okay. Thanks. My second question is on launches. Last year was record year for launches. This year looking to be pretty strong as well. Can you just talk us through your confidence in absorbing that new supply that you're putting out? And I guess any granularity on what's driving demand on the ground would be helpful.
So as I said a while ago, 2018 was a very strong year, and we're not seeing any change yet in the environment that basically would indicate any kind of slowdown as of yet. No, so far what we've seen has been strength across the board on the different brands that we actually have in the market. No? Now, having said that, obviously on a quarter-on-quarter basis, that could change depending on what inventory is available, how strong the previous quarter is. So, I would actually suggest that when you actually look at in our business, it's hard to take a look at development and look at it on a quarter-on-quarter basis, because, as I mentioned, there will be some quarters that there's going to be some excitement, either up or down. But I think long-term, the trend line is moving up, and over the last 10 years now, what we've seen really is despite some volatility, we continue to increase average sales per year.
Thank you, Jason.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, please press star 1 if you wish to ask questions. There are currently no questions on the line. I'll now hand the conference back to today's presenters. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Any more questions from our live audience? Yes, please.
Sir, can you describe to us what your expectations are with regard to the behavior of future construction costs and margin assessment? Will there be margin headwinds going forward, given the inflation and...
Construction costs has been going up anywhere from 5 to 7%, and so far we've had the ability to price that into our products to prevent any kind of margin erosion.
sir, so you expect margin stability this year?
Steady.
Sir, and then on the capex, what's the funding strategy for that? Are you tapping the banks, more of the capital market?
Our estimate is we need to raise anywhere in between 15 to 20 billion. We intend to tap both the bank market as well as the debt capital market. So possibly for the incremental requirement, half from banks and half from the capital markets.
So and this additional debt would be 70% of the capex, or how much of the overall capex?
It's 15 to 20 of the 130 billion capex. So about a little over 10%.
And the rest would be from internal?
Internally generated funds.
Sir, lastly, on the Bay Area, we heard, I don't know if the rumor is factual, the prices have soared, like 300,000 level per... So I really don't know what the 300,000, it's like per square meter of land value. Sir, is this something that are you worried about, like the Bay Area shooting up because of demand from Chinese, and your in policy on whether you should cap the Chinese demand or the foreign component of overall sales?
I think land prices in general have been going up, particularly in key districts in Metro Manila. Not all areas in Metro Manila are increasing at the same pace. I think the ones that are experiencing high demand, you see that prices have been going up quite sharply. So that could be like here in Makati, in BGC, as you know, in Arca, I think in the Manila Bay area. So that's a function of I guess demand, no? That people are seeing in those particular areas, and therefore the underlying land prices increase. But that's not, I think, indicative of overall Metro Manila or overall Philippines. No, I don't think prices have been going up that sharply in other areas. So I think it's a bit isolated in particular geographies.
Sir, on the cap, if you have a policy on capping the Chinese compo or the foreign?
We don't discriminate, number one, with any nationality. I think we just want to be clear that what we strive for is diversity in the communities that we're building. No? We're not discriminating against any nationality, but we strive for diversity. And that's the way we try to work our sales force, to be able to target diversity in our developments.
Sir, what would be your top three concerns this year? If last year is, you describe it as an amazing year, do you consider this year a difficult year, a challenging year? What would be the things that worry you most at night?
Well, it's always challenging when you're actually clipping this kind of growth rate now. I mean, as you know, we've been doing this year in, year out. And, obviously it's always a challenge for us on how we're going to continue to grow at this particular pace. But as I've said a while ago, we continue to plant seeds to make sure that we are well positioned to capture growth that we see in the market. No? So for us, again, that's one, how do you keep up this particular growth? But we feel confident, as I've said, that we remain on track with our 2020-40 plan. I mean, the other concern always is the economy. I mean, obviously, we've done well on the back of the strength of the Philippine economy. So if the Philippine economy continues to grow, I think we're well positioned to be able to continue to grow the company. Now, if somehow or the economy softens, then obviously we're not insulated from that. Obviously we will be affected by any kind of impact that we see in the Philippine economy. And then thirdly, I think the talk on interest rates, we don't know yet how things will play out, although I think there's a little bit of a silver lining over the last 2 months, but that could also quickly change depending on what happens globally. No? So if interest rates increase sharply, then obviously our businesses will also get affected.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Tina. Last question from Jomar.
Yeah, thanks. This question is actually on, questions around capital management, since you mentioned it. One is, what's if you were to look at that 16.5 ROE and attribute it, meaning what is the ROE of each business, let's say property, what would we see? What's the what would we?
The ROE on the residential obviously will be higher because as you know, when you look at our higher end brands, which is 2/3, which I mentioned a while ago, that's working capital neutral. So you know, there's some capital to be used, but you know, that's primarily for you know, in purchasing the land. But when you look at the commercial asset side, because that's capital intensive, so in those businesses, you actually have a lower ROE, no? That's shopping centers, offices, and hotels, because you put in all the capital, you don't get that capital back till over time. Unlike in residential, some projects in a year, you know, we are even cash flow positive. We don't, it doesn't require any capital.
Okay. And would that be the same for, because you mentioned capital recycling. So I'm assuming that as you recycle your capital, there will be different business models would have different, I guess, efficiencies in terms of capital recycling. So
yeah, that's why we look at it on a portfolio basis. You know, everything hangs together because of the business model we have, and that basically includes our land banking activities, the amount of commercial assets that we have, the level of you know, residential launches that we have. So everything hangs together on the capital side. So for example, I'll give you an example. If we'll say we ramp up even faster on our commercial assets, then that could now put a strain on our balance sheet, right? So we say if I want to double, let's say, my commercial assets in the next 1 or 2 years, I don't think our balance sheet could absorb that. That means that, and the only way to do that anyway is through acquisition. That means it will stretch the balance sheet. Now, do we want to do that? Depending on the opportunity. As I mentioned a while ago, I think this year, 2018, we've seen a lot more flexibility in our balance sheet, okay, because we were able to build our commercial assets now over the last 5 years. You saw this, the compounded annual growth rate of, I think, close to 25%, and yet keeping our net DE at a fairly stable level. So our ability to gear up, before I think we put an internal limit of 1:1. I think when we launched this 5 years ago, we said 1:1. And now we'll blow that 1:1 and we'll still be okay. Just because of the way we moved the business forward in terms of our recurring income. No? So that 1:1 limit is, if you ask me now, even if we breach that, which we have no intention based on what we're seeing, our balance sheet can absorb that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jomar. And I guess with that, we don't want to keep the media waiting. So we'd like to thank everyone. In behalf of management, we'd like to thank everyone for attending this afternoon. Snacks are available at the back. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Okay.